Please silence all electronic devices.
He enjoyed hearing about and reading my articles. He was very proud of me and always teased me about when I was going to get my Pulitzer, which is a mispronunciation, as most journalists know, Pulitzer. But I just think he was just really happy to see some of the work that I've done that ends up changing state law and helping people.
Any further discussion or debate?
Welcome, welcome to the latest episode of the WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Glad to have you along. The pandemic has affected all of us, professionally, personally, and for some, of course, physically. Kate Martin is an investigative reporter with Carolina Public Press. She has been following the various impacts of coronavirus just about every day for 5 months.
It just feels so surreal. I've read about pandemics almost all my life. I've been very interested in epidemiology and disease spread and how society reacts to pandemics. And here I am living in the middle of one, and it's like a slow-moving disaster is what it feels like, because I'm reading about it when I'm working. I can't not pay attention to it when I'm off. On the other hand, if I take any kind of a break, then I miss big news, and I don't know. It's really hard.
While Kate has been seeking public records and data trends in an effort to elevate the science of this story, she says ultimately it turns back to those who have been affected.
It's life and death. It's, you know, at a very basic level for people, it's about how, like, do they have food? Do they have shelter? You know, what do they do with their kids when they are an essential worker and they have to go to work at the hospital or at the grocery store? I think this pandemic is really exacerbating some of the societal inequities that we've had in America for a while.
Is there anybody you've met either remotely through a Zoom call like this or perhaps in person? Is there anybody that you've met that immediately comes to mind as you think back on your reporting here in the last few months?
There's a couple of women I've talked to who very early in the pandemic were tested for COVID. And at the time, it was taking about 2 weeks for them to get results. And the health department had told them to isolate in their house until they received the results of their test. And in the meantime, they were laid off from their job. And there's some dispute from the business owners, both the husband and the wife who owns the business, as to whether they were laid off or fired for cause. And then one of them applied for unemployment and was turned down because they said that they were told they were fired for cause. I mean, there's a lot of stories out there like that. I can't particularly say this one person. I mean, the story of these two women, it's indicative of a group of people who, for whatever reason, lost their job and now have no access to unemployment.
You've done a lot of stories. You've done a lot of reporting. You've been, by my ears, you've been a mainstay on the press briefings with the governor, with Dr. Cohen, the state health director. You've done a lot of reporting here in the last few months. Is there a particular story that stands out to you? You've done a lot of stories, but just, I guess, as I asked you about whether or not there are particular figures that immediately come to mind, are there particular stories that you've done here that you look back on and for whatever reason, they resonate in your memory?
One of the first ones that I did, I was the lead reporter on a story about death certificates in North Carolina. And this was early on in the pandemic, right when we started forming this newsroom collaborative. It's a statewide group of, you know, 6 or 7 news outlets all over the state. And one of our first stories was about death certificates. And I had wanted to know how many people are really dying of coronavirus. Because at the time, not a lot of counties, like I think most of the counties had only gotten 3 test kits from the state at one point. And then, you know, there started to be getting more access to testing. But still, we saw this, you know, at the time, there was a restriction on who could get the test, right? You had to have either been to a country like Italy or China or had been in contact with somebody who had a known coronavirus positive test, which left out a lot of other people who may have come in contact with that person or may have contracted it in the community. And at one point, the head of the state medical examiners had told funeral homes and doctors that if the person who died looks like they might have had coronavirus symptoms, then you can say probable COVID-19 on their death certificate. And so we started asking for death certificates from all 100 counties across the state for, I think it was from the beginning of March through mid-April. And we started looking at the death certificates. And, you know, we started seeing a lot of, like toward the end of April, or toward the middle of April especially, we started seeing a lot of COVID, probable COVID-19. I think to me that showed, one, you know, we didn't have enough tests. We didn't have, because of that lack of tests, they had to restrict who was able to get it. And I mean, it was just a real lack of resources at the very beginning, I guess. And it just showed that the disease was spreading far faster than we had the ability to test for it.
So you've been seeking answers. You've been fighting to get answers on this since late March, as reporters across the state, across the country, have tried to glean more data and better understanding and more context about death certificates. For you, on a very personal note, you have been at this both professionally and personally, and there's this painful intersection because you've navigated all of this as you experienced a major loss in your life. Your dad, Jack Bowen, he died back in the end of May. He was in a nursing home in Kansas, and I'm wondering if you'll just tell us a little bit about this experience. And did he die of the virus? Do we even know that? Do you even know that at this point?
I'd love to know that. And I can't say yes or no, because at the end of the day, you know, it's weird. When there's a crisis in my life, reporter brain just sort of kicks in. And I just started wanting to ask questions. And I called the nursing home and I asked, did anyone test positive for coronavirus there? And they said, oh, we've got all these protections in place. And this, you know, if there is someone with a fever and these other symptoms, then we will test them. And didn't directly say yes or no. And wouldn't answer that when I asked yes or no. And so I literally just started emailing people. I called the county health department there. I emailed with the county health department. She said, well, I can call them on your behalf. And, you know, they said the same thing to her. And so finally, I just emailed the state epidemiologist's office in Kansas, which is what I would do in North Carolina, just to say, you know, do you even have any record of anyone being tested at this place? How many people have even been tested there? And, you know, the guy basically said, well, we don't really have a great way to figure that out based on our data, but I don't think anyone's been tested there at all. So then I requested my dad's medical records, right? Because I'm his daughter and I can get those. I can't get those for normal people in North Carolina because I'm not related to them. I don't have any right to them. But so I got the medical records and, you know, it shows, you know, when they tested them for temperature and stuff. And there were a few days where he had over 100 degree temperature, but in the records, it didn't say 100 degrees 0.4, which is where you were supposed to test people for coronavirus. And so because he didn't meet that one threshold, you know, they didn't test him. And, you know, I can't confidently say that he didn't have it. He even went there to begin with because he had pneumonia that he couldn't shake. And he's also disabled and he couldn't take care of himself.
To the extent that you would like to do it, I don't want to pry and I don't want to be melodramatic on it. But at the same time, it feels a little weird to have you talking about your dad and not at least say, tell me a little bit about your dad. I'm just full disclosure. You and I, we don't know each other particularly well. I never had the opportunity to meet your father. But who was he and what are you going to miss about him or what do you miss about him?
Well, he was an Army veteran. He served in Vietnam. He was a cook. And as a father, he was our softball coach. He worked a lot and he worked early in the morning so he could get off in time to coach our games and coach our team. He enjoyed hearing about and reading my articles. He was very proud of me and always teased me about when I was going to get my Pulitzer, which is a mispronunciation, as most journalists know, of Pulitzer. He was, I don't know if he was entirely serious, but I just think he was just really happy to see some of the work that I've done that ends up changing state law and helping people.
there, I imagine, have been a lot of hard moments here since May 26th. There was a more of a public moment that I guess I just wanted to ask you about briefly, see if you wanted to debrief on it at all. But as I mentioned earlier, you have been really a mainstay during these press briefings that Governor Cooper and Secretary Cohen have led really throughout the pandemic. And there was almost this collision for you personally. It was back mid-June, I believe. You asked a question about nursing homes with this terrible event of losing your dad just a couple weeks in the rearview mirror. And it was a rare moment where I haven't heard you get emotional in other settings. It was a rare moment where your guard came down.
Good afternoon, Governor and Dr. Cohen. Thank you so much for taking my question. This is Kate Martin with Carolina Public Press. This is regarding homes and rehabilitation facilities that they claim to have positive cases. And I want to be clear, I understand that you've got a plan to test everybody, but I have a question about the ones that say that they have no positive cases. Readers have contacted me who are concerned about their loved ones, and they've said that the facilities are not saying whether those facilities are even testing residents and staff. I've asked DHHS on their behalf, who told me to talk to the county health department, and the counties told me to talk to the facilities. The facilities instead meet these questions with how clean their facilities are and what the testing protocols are, but they're not actually answering whether they're testing anybody. As a journalist, I find this puzzling, and just in the interest of full disclosure, my father died last month in Kansas in a facility, and they won't tell me whether they were testing anybody. So I want to know, does DHHS know whether nursing homes without reported infections are actually testing their staff and residents, and how many of those tests are actually being performed? If not, please tell me why, and do you think this is acceptable? If you don't know, thank you.
Kate, so sorry to hear about your dad. I know that must be a very difficult time for you and your family, and I want to extend my personal deepest sympathies. It's important that we have this information.
And it's I guess tell me a little bit about that moment to the extent you want to, or you can.
Yeah. Gosh, I didn't think I'd get emotional now either, you know. Ever since my dad died, I was thinking, you know, I'm not the only one going through this. There's other people with questions about what happened to their parent and whether they were tested. And I felt like I was asking questions that other people also had. And this was really driven home by my personal experience. And for, I want to say, a week and a half before I asked that question, I even questioned my own ability to ask it. Because of the reaction I'm having now, and I practiced asking it, and I'd cry, and I was able to wait a little while, and after a couple of dry runs asking it and not getting emotional, I was like, all right, I'm ready to do this. And, you know, I also felt like I had to say why I was asking this question, because as a journalist, I believe deeply in accountability. And clearly, I couldn't ask the question without disclosing my father's death. And at that point, I just lost it and had to take a moment. So, you know, I avoid asking questions where I have a conflict of interest, and I've done that before, and I'll continue to do that. But in this case, I felt like it was important to say that I wasn't doing it to get attention or to get the governor to say how much sympathy he had for me, which I appreciate. But as a human, I appreciate, like, Mandy Cohen as well. But, you know, in hindsight, letting people in on that moment wasn't such a bad thing, because the pandemic is more than numbers. It's more than death certificates and names on a page and statistics. It's about individual lives and how we are affected by the decisions that we all make collectively as a society, and about how our government is allocating resources, federal and state, to try to confront what is essentially the biggest disaster of our time.
You can find her work, some of her work. You can find her her COVID updates on Twitter at Kate Reports, K-A-T-E-R-E-P-O-R-T-S. Kate Martin is your guest here on the WUNC Politics Podcast. She's the lead investigative reporter, a data hawk, if you will, for Carolina Public Press. Us in the news bubble of North Carolina, we refer to that as CPP with some level of frequency. CPP is part of a collaboration, just to stick with the C's and add another C on there. You're part of this collaboration, Carolina Public Press, as well as several other news outlets. WUNC is among them. And I'm wondering what has been the best benefit of this collaboration for consumers of news, readers, listeners, viewers across the state?
Well, there's a few benefits, more than a few, I think. But the ones that come to mind for me immediately is I'm pretty new to North Carolina. I'm going on my third year this month, starting my third year in North Carolina this month. I'm not an expert in open meetings and open records law, and it's really great to bounce ideas off of people or have them be able to help me with any appeals if I need them. That's really great from a practical standpoint. From a reporting standpoint, if you have an ambitious idea that requires you to talk to all 100 counties in the state, it's great. I've been the reporter to file records requests in every single jurisdiction before at previous newspapers that I worked at. It's difficult when you don't know somebody there, and it seems to me like, you know, if at least one reporter has been to one of the counties that I'm reporting on or trying to get a hold of, as a reporter, that's incredibly helpful to get a statewide perspective on important issues.
I'm going to try to tick through a couple of others. I often refer to this as the rapid fire, various and sundry. So feel free to be super concise if you want. And if you want to expound a little bit, that is totally understandable as well. I'll give you a longer one to start. Do I have it right that you are you're the first person in your family to go to or graduate from college? Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay.
On both counts.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's something challenging that people might not know about becoming the first person in your family to go to and graduate from college?
I'll give you two things. First is my family, my dad did not like the government very much, and so he never paid his taxes. As much as he was a wonderful softball coach and father, he did not do that for much of his life. And if you don't file a tax return, then your kid can't apply for college aid. You can't get, you can't fill out the FAFSA, the Federal Application for Financial Student Aid. You can't get Pell Grants. You can't get federal student loans. And so what I had to do, you know, my family was basically poor. I had no college savings. I had a plane ticket and $75 basically when I got to college. And I had to get these really awful, like, off-market student loans. And then I got married young, and so that was great because then I could finally file taxes and get student aid, although that's not why we got married. We're still very much in love more than 20 years later. The other thing is when you do get college aid, you get it all at once. And so as a person who came basically from a pretty poor family, suddenly having $5,000 or whatever for the semester was pretty terrifying and also exciting. So you basically you're thinking to yourself like, wow, I hope I don't screw this up and I need to make this last all semester.
If financials came in, they were great, and Carolina Public Press was going to give you a $5,000 bonus tomorrow, what would you do with that $5,000?
I'd probably put it in savings. Do something boring like fix our house with it. I don't know.
What did you want to be growing up?
I wanted to be a zookeeper.
A zookeeper?
Yes.
And work with particular animals, or?
I wanted to work with big cats, but at the time, just be aware that the Tiger King was not on the show on Netflix. So.
Interesting. Was there a particular zoo you grew up going to, or an initial, I mean, what sparked that? Was it a book? Was it a trip to a zoo?
Well, I got what were those called? These little books that had big colorful pictures of animals in it. Like, I forget what it was called. I was like 7 or 8, maybe. I liked cats a lot, and I thought a big cat would be cooler.
Kate Martin is on Twitter at Kate Reports. She is the lead investigative reporter for Carolina Public Press, and she has been your guest here on the WUNC Politics Podcast. Kate, thank you for all the candor.
Thank you for having me, Jeff.
Find and read some of Kate's work at carolinapublicpress.org. What do you like about the podcast? What do you dislike? I'm on Twitter at J_TIBS. This conversation was produced by the talented Charlie Shelton Ormond. You can find him at ChuckShelton14. Charlie also helps to craft the WUNC program Tested, which is available wherever you download podcasts and at our website. Speaking of WUNC.org, don't be a stranger. Find the latest political coverage from Rusty Jacobs, my State House reporting comrade, throughout the week. All right, that'll do it. Thanks for listening. For Kate Martin, I'm Jeff Tiberi.